to welcome on in. It is Jonathan Peterlin with Nick Padone today. Nick is out. He'll be back on Tuesday as we are at the Barley House and we are getting ready for the Real American Freestyle. We have a whole press conference and everything. We're barging into a press conference. In the meanwhile, though, we have Kayla Coljean on the board. Yes! We have Mac Robinson on site with us. Jax Gregory back in the studios in downtown Cleveland. Nick, how are we doing today?
This is really cool, man. It's cool to be out here. You mentioned it. I see some little kid, like, burst through the doors at the Barley House doing a Hulk Hogan impression. So this is cool. This is something that I've never been a part of before. That's the way that I'd put this.
That was the simplest way of telling me you don't do anything with wrestling at all. You're surrounded by a bunch of people that only care about wrestling and love wrestling more than you and I will ever imagine, and here we are. It was a very polite way of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, everything's very eccentric. Yes. Everything's very spray tanned. I like it.
It's spray tanned? Let's be honest. We have a lot of intimidating people looking in our direction in the current moment. He looked away when I said it. yeah, there we go. We got him to smile. I thought it was going to be like, the figures in London, speaking of London boy, the figures in London that just stay like a statue and then like they don't move at all. There's a lot of those type of people here. Very intimidating men. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, we're not big wrestling guys, but we're in the presence of a lot of big wrestling guys with the Real American Freestyle. I am excited though. I told you before the show, so there was like a 1 year stretch when I was growing up. It was like 6th to 7th grade where I got really into wrestling, okay? And I liked Thursday Night SmackDown. I liked Monday Night Raw. Like, it was awesome. And then after about a year or so, that was a time of my life, and really everyone's life, where I'm 36 years old. Backyard wrestling was at like its peak. And so backyard wrestling was taking over, and then like people didn't know that real wrestling or like wrestling with the pros was actually fake. And so they just like people were taking like chairs to people's heads. You were using like real like actual tacks in order to fight people, and people just got bloodied up and a mess. And so I watched it for a year, and then my mom was like, "You're not watching. You're not doing any more of that ever again, really."
You know, and I realized that that's probably for the best, because that's where you and I differed in that conversation. Because when I was growing up, like I knew, everybody knew, the word was out that wrestling is not real. So I was like, "Okay, yeah, you're like, why would I watch this?
You have no idea it was real." Battles. I'm sure you've seen that the gif of the guy that was like finding out it's fake for the first time and is just devastated with tears. It was like actual schoolyard battle. Like the same way you debate who's the GOAT in like any sport, you would debate whether or not you thought wrestling was fake or real. Mm. It was just one of those things. And no, it was very, very fake. There's no questioning that. But there's a lot of people that thought it was real. But there was one guy named Kurt Angle that I really did like. He was like he was kind of a loser in the wrestling world in some respect.
So he wasn't very good?
He was good. He was just not played to be the hero was the problem. Okay. And so he was actually, oddly enough, in 2025, people would have loved him in many respects, because his bit was that he was an Olympic gold medalist. He won an Olympic gold medal, or maybe he was in like a bronze medal or something at the 96 Olympics. So he was like a real, like just American guy.
Yeah.
Like that was his whole shtick. And for some reason, as America as everyone is, you got to remember, this is before 9/11. I got to teach you some things here, okay? Before 9/11, there wasn't as much patriotism in this country. There just flat out wasn't. There was people that like my dad, for instance, would only buy American cars. My dad would, and that's why we love our good friends over there at Classic Chevy and Menor. But like after 2001 and 9/11, it became like really like, all right, let's go America over everyone's ass. Before that, you could have a guy like Kurt Angle that was just like a patriot, and not as many people jived with it.
Makes sense. I will say, like, in this new wrestling era, I do quite enjoy, like, the clips that I see that go out. And I get some of, like, the characters that go into it, right? Like, I think Pat McAfee, whenever you put a microphone in front of him, like, you know, really good content comes from that.
Oh, yeah.
Logan Paul. I know. So, like, I have friends that follow the WWE and have for a really long time. And I know when Logan Paul was getting ready to get into it, everybody was a little skeptical. Like, oh, is this just another celebrity that's going to try his hand at this thing?
Yeah.
He was a high school wrestler here in Westlake and then college wrestler, and now he's really good at playing this WWE villain character. So I'm aware of how it works. I just don't really follow it on the regular.
Yeah, but you got to appreciate the showmanship of it all.
I do.
I think that's the cool part about all this. And we're at the Barley House. We're promoting our guys with the Real American Freestyle. And one thing I love about wrestlers is I love the showmanship of it all. And I love the idea. And we'll see this as we're here at the Barley House. We're going to see this all day long. Everyone that walks in here, they are world-class. You mentioned, like, Pat McAfee. There's a reason why McAfee can go from doing what he does to also then being part of the wrestling world and then going back in. Like, as a content maker yourself, you have to appreciate what these guys are.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, like, I get that that's why you tune in. Even that's kind of what, like, boxing has become. It's about, like, the walkouts and the entrances and... do you see some of the people that were just getting off the bus outside of this thing?
I thought they were all going to come in.
I'm like, there was not even any cameras, but these people were acting as if there were cameras. I don't know. Like I said, I've never seen anything quite like this before, and we're buckled up until 7 p.m. to see some things that I'm sure that I've
seen. Yeah, we might have Eric Bischoff over here as well. He's part of this deal with a Real American Freestyle, and so we'll be keeping an eye out for anybody that comes in and comes out. We got a lot of other guests as well. Anwar Richardson, Orange Bloods, basically a legend around Texas college football. He'll be joining us at 5:20. We have a lot of different other people. Josh Perry won a championship with the Buckeyes. He'll be joining us at 3 o'clock. He's with NBC Sports. He's got his own burgeoning media career as well, so he'll join us. And then we have our buddy Daryl Ryder. Your buddy Daryl Ryder.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. We're going to actually reconnect the Sunday show here on a Friday at 6 o'clock. So Daryl's going to stop by as well. That should be a good time. But we're going to start off talking about Myles Garrett and whether or not a Myles Garrett trade would have been something the Browns would have gone down the road with. And like after Micah Parsons yesterday, Nick, I mean, Nick and I did a lot of Micah Parsons conversations yesterday once that news hit, but we didn't really dive too much into the Myles Garrett side of this. And something that I thought was really interesting was the idea that when it came to the Cowboys and what they could and could not do, and this has really been highlighted in the 24 hours since, the Cowboys understood they could not possibly pay those three players. The three players being Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons to equate for what would be 50% of their cap. We've seen this a couple other times in the NFL. 2021 Chiefs, for instance, had three players. Why do you think Tyreek Hill ended up going to the Dolphins? Like, at some point, you do have to make hard decisions. And for Jerry, and this is the part where I think it differs from the Browns' perspective, for Jerry, he thought to himself, we were a bad defense last year, and by many metrics, they were one of the worst defenses in the NFL, including the red zone. All but four teams are better or worse than the Cowboys in the red zone last year. And he looked at it and said, we're going to be bad on the defense whether we pay a guy $47 million or not. Why don't we go towards the offense here?
I think it's just the whole way that it was approached, though, man. Like, the fact that last night in the press conference, Jerry Jones telling people, well, those two first-round picks that we got could turn into Pro Bowl players. Hey, Jerry, guess what? Micah Parsons played in a couple Pro Bowls during his time in Dallas. So I think that's the part of it that a lot of people, kind of myself included, are a little bit tripped up on, is just the messaging of this entire fallout.
Well, messaging has been miserable. Jerry's miserable in the messaging.
And then the fact that you're virtually waving a white flag on the Cowboys making a Super Bowl this year.
Well, they already were waving the white flag on that. Like, the difference there is that it's not as if the Cowboys were expected to be a playoff team this year.
Right.
It's not as if the Cowboys were... I think a lot of people got that mistaken because we've spent so much time talking about Dallas because guess what? We always talk about Dallas, but the reality is that the Cowboys weren't doing anything this year. And if anything, it's Jerry just recognizing that they weren't going to do anything this year. Why am I in defense of Jerry Jones right now?
You
Nick?
Really are.
I feel like I'm in defense of Jerry Jones.
You really are. But it surprises me.
When you take it back just a little bit, and listen, I hammered them for many respects because I think when you have a player like Micah Parsons, you should try to do everything you can to keep a player like Micah Parsons. But after hearing and after hearing some of the Cowboys' discourse, I actually think it makes some sense. You can only have so many teams where it accounts for 50% of your payroll between three players. And that's one thing I think the Browns are coming up against, too, and it's why they debated whether or not you trade or keep Myles Garrett. You know, when you're paying Myles Garrett and Deshaun Watson and Denzel Ward as much money as they are, all three of them with $100-plus million deals, you only got so much to go around. And when Deshaun Watson is basically just a paperweight, he's not real for this team. This is the economics of football that I think a lot of fans, they don't want to realize or acknowledge, and I get it. You shouldn't have to. You shouldn't watch football games on a spreadsheet. That's not your job. But there has to be responsible people in this discussion to enter it and say, find me an example where 50% of the cap gets taken up by three players and it works out for a team.
Well, the difference here is how you view the quarterbacks then. Because we know, and you just said, Deshaun Watson certainly ain't the guy that's going to be leading the Browns to the Super Bowl or even out of the tunnel week one.
Right.
Dak Prescott. Does Jerry Jones still believe that Dak Prescott is a guy that he can win a championship
with?
Well,
so he does, because last year when he paid him that big contract, that was the bet. And the bet that he's making, and this is why I can at least respect the continuity, and I think it differs for the Browns in one reason I'll get to in a second. I can respect the continuity. When you pay CeeDee Lamb and you pay Dak, you are telling the NFL we're an offensive team. That's who we are. We play on the offensive side of the ball. That's what we're trying to do. Where it's different for the Browns is that although the Browns gave Deshaun Watson all that money, that was already a sunken cost by the time we got to the Myles Garrett discussion.
Right.
What the Browns have signaled to everybody is we are a defensive team. Where's their money been spent on the offensive side of the ball after Deshaun Watson? It really doesn't exist. I mean, I wonder if they're going to pay David Njoku after this year. They're letting everyone go. Offensive line contracts, if it happened before Deshaun Watson, congratulations, you got your money. It hasn't happened after.
No.
They've been a defensive team.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy, maybe. And that's just because if you took Jerry Jeudy out of this receiving room, what would this receiver
room
be?
It's already one of the worst in the entire NFL.
So,
you signaled who you are. And
yeah.
So, like, for the Cowboys, here's where I come to their defense just a little bit. In many ways, it almost reminds me of the Bengals. We don't look at it that way because we don't think about Dak the same way we think about Joe Burrow. But it reminds me of what the Bengals are doing. They're like, we're an offensive team, not a defensive team. Why are we paying Trey Hendrickson a bunch of money to have one of the worst defenses in football already?
I guess the difference is, though, Joe Burrow's played in a Super Bowl already and had before he got his extension. The whole thing is just so fascinating to me because now they're really going to need to use those late first-round picks that they got back from Green Bay and actually hit on them and actually find players that can contribute.
Yeah.
I'm imagining on the defensive side of the football because those are guys that you could have on rookie contracts that are five-year options. You could keep those guys around your organization on the cheap, but it really feels like the Cowboys right now, like if this were the NBA, they're the definition of stuck in the middle to me, JP.
Well,
like,
that's
what
the hard
do you
part.
Do?
So people are going to say, well, of course they stink. They got rid of Micah Parsons. The reality is they were going to stink with or without Micah Parsons, though. That's the true story of this, and Micah Parsons wasn't making or breaking that.
They could have told themselves, though, hey, at least with Micah Parsons,
so, but
Dak,
this is what
CeeDee,
I respect
we'll
about
have
this.
A shot.
This
we'll
is
have
what
a
this
chance.
Is what I respect about this, though, is that this is Jerry, and in the past I feel like he would have continued to push the chips in the middle of the table for what is just a spent team and a done team. This is Jerry saying, all right, I recognize we're really far away and we got to try to do this a different way. 216-474-0092. Get at us on Twitter. Twitter reactions brought to you by our friends over there at Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Would the reaction with a Myles Garrett trade have been that different than the Micah Parsons one if it did in fact happen here? It's Jonathan Pito and Nick Bedone. Afternoon Drive. We are at the Barley House and with our friends at Real American Freestyle and with you, our friends, right here on The Fan.